Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Unauthorized Disclosure Podcast. I'm Kevin Gastola, and I'm very pleased to be joined by our guest for this week's episode, which is her name is Niecy X. She's with the Black Women's Defense League. She's currently in Houston, Texas, working to organize relief in the Fifth Ward in response to Hurricane Harvey. So thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
And so why don't we just start very broadly and generally with you giving people an idea of the kind of work you're doing, what particularly you've been focused upon with the Fifth Ward in the past days.
Yeah, so we are actually, we've been operating in the Fifth Ward and Third Ward off of Tidwell, Forest Park. We've had some comrades go out to Port Arthur and Beaumont. I mean, so we've been in a number of different places throughout Houston, but the focus has remained the same, and it's been really focusing in on communities of color that are often overlooked, low-income communities that are often overlooked and underserved when it comes to these types of natural disasters, but then also focusing in on creating some long-term access for these communities and for everyone involved to really start to work on creating communities and creating communities that can exist outside of state approval, outside of, you know, any type of law enforcement interventions, but that we are learning how to intervene for ourselves and that these communities are able to stand on their own even after a hurricane, and that perhaps this is something that can spread, and it doesn't require a hurricane in order to do that. Our focus as Black Women's Defense League is to help to provide resources, namely to Black women and to marginalized gender people within people of color, just, you know, the whole group. And it's just because, frankly, they're often not really thought of, you know, when we think of like the shelter situation, how many shelters are vetted and safe for a trans person to be in, or an undocumented person, or, you know, a Black woman who's perhaps like been abused. You know, sometimes these shelters are breeding grounds for that type of thing, and so we have to make sure that we're honing in, we're looking at the nuances, and that we're building from the bottom up instead of from the top down.
What about the major relief organizations, and then I guess I could throw into that the state and city officials? You know, they have their own plans for how they want to handle relief, but for lack of a better word, what are the gaps or what are the voids that are being created in which, you know, your organization's trying to fill, and what should people be aware of in the way that they're possibly failing?
Yeah, so with Hurricane Irma on our heels, Florida just openly say, this is in Houston, but openly say that people with felonies, people with warrants, all of these folks were either not going to be allowed into the shelter or arrested once they decided to come to the shelter. This is a person who's fleeing a hurricane, trying to keep their life intact, keep their family's lives intact, and they're being turned away or told that they're going to be, you know, placed in jail if they go and seek shelter. We're working for communities like that don't have those access to resources, for undocumented communities. As many people know and have heard, and it's something I'm sure will happen in Florida, but they allowed ICE, immigration, to come through the GRB Center, which is the primary Red Cross Center in Houston, and, you know, just round up people. And, you know, so it is a situation that is tragic for everybody, but it is definitely compounded in that tragedy when you're talking about folks who are already marginalized by those types of statuses. And so we're namely, you know, trying to go in on the areas where they've left behind. And frankly, that's almost entire communities, you know, of color. We've been operating off of Tidwell here for the last few days doing home reconstruction. A lot of elderly people live out here in the neighborhoods, and we just need hands. you know, who are willing to help them take down all of this moldy sheetrock, and to really help them get a head start in getting their homes back intact, because that leads to a whole nother problem with gentrification. So, yeah, those are some of the areas that we're working in.
What was the flooding like for these areas in particular? And what kind of concerns do the communities have that perhaps the government officials allowed water to be let into these typically marginalized communities? I know there are parts of some of these cities that were badly hit. I know there are some people that have even filed lawsuits because they believe reservoirs were opened by the Army Corps of Engineers. So is there any sort of issue like this in the areas that you have been dealing with?
Yes and no. I think that a lot of people just aren't aware of the ramifications of these things. And then there are some people who are, and they're kind of looked at as conspiracy theorists. Even though we have plenty of verifiable history and evidence from like something like Hurricane Katrina, to know that sometimes they do open up levees in areas that are low income or areas that they've already kind of thrown away or that they don't care much about, because it's not seen as a loss in those situations. In fact, they see it as a gain. And so we've been going through and just trying to spread that education, start these conversations with these communities and really get them involved in that whole process. But yeah, it's definitely a piece of the puzzle. That, you know, it's either through abandonment of communities like these that gentrification happens, because, right, there's all types of so-called crime and everything else, and everybody's just like, urban renewal, that's what we need, you know? Or a hurricane comes, it levels everything. People cannot afford to rebuild. Folks who, you know, black women have, what, a $5 net worth, according to some statistics. These are people who don't have the liquid resources to say, I'm going to hire these contractors to come in and redo my house. It's no problem. I'm going to go vacation in Miami. You know, like, these people don't have those resources. And so that's a prime opportunity for adjusters and property, you know, buying folks and banks and stuff to come in and buy entire neighborhoods. And those neighborhoods are disbanded. Those people are disbanded from community. And, you know, you get new developments out of it.
So what specifically are you advising people or sort of support are you trying to give to them so they can prepare themselves for predators that are going to come after them? And I mean that in the sense of like people who are affiliated with banks or people who are coming in and, you know, there are going to be several people that they probably end up speaking with. You may tell them, you know, their home is not livable anymore. We have to, there's possibly cases where they like take it away and then they have to go find another way. So how, what role can your group play to try to help people deal with that?
I would say access to resources and people who can tell them better. We've been working with a group called Women in Construction. They came down, where are they from? Alabama, I want to say. But they came down and they are certified contractors. And they've been going into a lot of these elderly folks' homes and not only doing the renovation, but really educating some of these homeowners about what their rights are, as well as some of the things that they're going to hear and see. And they've been doing that on the ground in their own areas by educating, you know, women who may not have access to knowing, you know, if they're getting told a lie by a contractor who's saying, I want to put up some sheetrock and it's going to cost you like $5,000. You know, like it allows them to know what they can do. And so I would say it's education. And also kind of getting them involved in the process, and also being kind of a way to where they're not having to listen to those folks. But most of these folks want to keep, most of these people want to keep their homes. The problem, though, is that if you don't have the resources to be able to get your house back in living order, you know, you end up moving into an apartment complex or something. And so we're just trying to mitigate that. And so the way that we're helping is getting people on the ground, actively working to do these demo jobs. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to cut out some sheetrock and to, you know, throw it in a trash pile. And so that's the way that we're helping. We're trying to help financially as much as possible, mitigating any type of cost with like school clothes, kids' school clothes, all of that stuff, buying hardwares. Another thing that we're doing is a co-op, a tools co-op in certain neighborhoods where they're able to go and rent these tools. Nobody had to buy anything, but rent, use them for their necessary purposes. And in doing so, they agree to help somebody else. So when the next door neighbor is doing his part, he's like, yeah, I've got someone, you know, he's helping out. And so that helps a great deal. And so those are some of the more long-term things that we want to keep moving even after this.
Now, I want to know if you've had any experience there while helping with these people. I've seen in the news a lot of reports about problems with refineries or plants in the area. Are people in those communities concerned about the pollution? Or I know that in these communities there is a persistent environmental racism. There is the exploitation that goes on, but as far as like the immediate aftermath and taking advantage of these communities, are you working with groups to defend against the sort of toxic waste that might be spreading?
Yeah, we're working with a group that we met at the Toxic Prisons Conference, and he's coming up with some mappings of like the heavily polluted areas. To be frank and honest, a lot of these people just don't know. They don't know because the news did not really share much information about what was happening. They've kept a lot quiet. They've kept a lot quiet about Port Arthur. We're hearing that upwards of 100 bodies, you know, were pulled out of the lake out there, and that multiple plants have been compromised. And so a lot of folks just don't know what that means for them and what that means for the things that they're touching and breathing. And like you said, it is a persistent problem in urban communities, communities of color, that this pollution, like those are the areas where the pollution is, and that's no coincidence. So people who do know are concerned, and they're, you know, actively working, you know, against it. But I have to say that a lot of folks are just trying to hold on with the last few little bits that they have. And we really need people who are in the academic areas to create some graphs and to create some maps that show this. And for us to be able to rally folks in the support of it. So we're not that in-depth. We do know of some sites. We do know of some things. And, you know, we're working as much as we can in that area. But we do need help. We need help with folks mapping out those spaces and making sure that we're able to publicize that and get that out to the communities that are affected, but also those who are okay with that type of an effect, that they know that they're being held accountable as well.
But are these areas where there are like there are smells in the air? Are people having trouble with breathing? That is there a noticeable change from what it was like before?
Yeah, I mean, I think that like breathing in asbestos and, you know, moldy sheetrock particles, which is basically what everyone in one way or another is having to do when they're doing their home renovations. That's a thing, but then there's also these plants and stuff, and it's hard to say if there was a change, because a lot of times these things were emitting these types of toxic fumes and gas and waste already, and it's just more so now, and it's all over everything. I don't know the extent of, you know, all of the damages, but I would have to assume so. I just don't have a specific, you know, answer to that, as if it's gotten better or worse, you know.
That's fair. So let me ask you about an immediate issue, which is how are people dealing with food and having water after the disaster?
Yeah, Yeah, so one of the good things has been that the outpouring of support for both our organization, we're working with a group called World on My Shoulders, but also just in general within the city, food is not as scarce anymore. What is scarce are tangible things that people are needing to start over. Some people are needing housing vouchers. If their apartment complex or a rent home or something like that was flooded, there's no rebuilding. It's like, where do I move to? Where do I live? And so we're really searching for that. But as far as food and water, we're encouraging people to buy and to have bottled water. And of course, we've been supplying a ton of that. We're not encouraging folks to drink, you know, out of the water faucets. But of course, they've got to take showers, you know, and, you know, the skin is the largest organ on a body. And so it's a little sketchy in some of those areas. But for the most part, food has been, is an available commodity here in Houston right now.
And then if there's anything more that you would like to add, I take from speaking with you that your organization is bringing what we could call an abolitionist perspective to your organizing, that you know, we have to handle these people, but to the extent that there are issues, we're not looking to incarcerate anyone in the moment. We're not looking to invite the state to come in and take care of problems. I know that you may also have some concerns with what's going on inside the prisons around the Houston area and the way that they might have been handled. So if there's anything you would like to add.
I mean, what we're noticing, and this is on a higher level, is that they allowed, what was it, 6 or 7 different police departments to come here and supposedly train during the hurricane, or to help provide relief, as they said. I'm going to call it training. I'm going to say that the way that they're treating the people who are living in the shelters, the Red Cross shelters, is as though they're sleeping a prison. There's a constant police presence just about everywhere that you go. The National Guard sleeps upstairs at the shelter. So they're walking through constantly. You have several different police organizations who are patrolling the shelters, patrolling the whole city. Up until like yesterday, it was on like a 12 o'clock curfew. And so what I would say is that we just really need to be mindful about how state power works in these situations, and look at ways that communities themselves can start to work out some of these solutions, because we're seeing that the state isn't going to do it for us. And not only that, but as an organizer, as a revolutionary, I really challenge other folks of those same mindsets to really understand that the work is only like maybe 15% going to rallies, maybe 15% doing Black Bloc, doing all of these other different things. But it's the communities that we're saying that we are advocating for and that we want liberation for are still left with nothing, and they're having to fight to, you know, maintain their lives, and we're not there for it. We really have to question our dedication to movement work. And so I'm going to make a call out to any organizers, activists, volunteers, whatever you want to call yourself, that, you know, we're going to need you in Houston, and I'm sure that Florida is going to need some people here soon too. But we need folks who are willing to get on the ground, get their hands dirty, and do the work of the people and for the people, and also help to build some of these longstanding opportunities for us to help to, you know, help folks control their own communities. Because I'm definitely very anti-police, I'm anti-government. But what I'm not anti is anti-people, you know, determining their own lives and figuring out the best ways to see that to fruition. Ways that people can help out short of coming directly to us is going to be that we are taking donations. There's www.blackwomensdefenseleague.com. That takes you to our Battered Women's Rescue Fund. people are still dealing with domestic violence in light of this storm. And it's because there's a lot of pressures, there's a lot of conflict. And so we still need to be able to go in and help those women and people who are dealing with that. And then we also have PayPal.me/VWDL, and those funds go directly, I want you to tag it Hurricane Harvey, but those funds are going to go directly to all of these efforts. We've been going out and doing distributions daily. I'm on my way to one right now, but doing distributions of a number of different supplies, like food, like healthy food for one, because there's a ton of canned goods going around, but healthy food. Like fruits and vegetables, passing those out, having, you know, people have access to hygiene products and all of that stuff. And also our construction equipment, making sure people have boots and things like that. So we're just needing, you know, help in all of the different ways. If we can get your body here, we can make sure that you'll be okay otherwise. So if there are people who are wanting to come and they're looking like, where's room and board, just contact us and we will work that out.
And that money is not going to go to, like, some CEO like the American Red Cross.
Heck no. Heck no. Because I ain't no CEO. It's going to I don't get no CEO pay or anything like that. It's going directly to the people. Anybody who follows our page, Follow World on My Shoulder, you'll see images and pictures from some of the stuff. We admittedly don't take we don't take pictures of everything, and it's because I feel like people shouldn't have to be a part of a photo op in order to receive aid and care. I think that that's kind of perverse, but some instances they send us pictures, you know, and they want people to know, you know, what's happening, and, you know, and they're happy about it. And so those we post up, and, you know, we need that continued support, because this is a long-term effort. This isn't something that's over with just because the water has receded a little.
Well, you're right. It's going to take quite a bit to rebuild, and it's going to take organizations like yours there on the ground, and then those kinds of organizations will be needed in Florida. So, and that, I raised the issue of the CEO because people are pouring millions into some of these relief organizations, and you don't know that more than a quarter of those donations are actually going to get to people. So it's important to speak to people like you so everyone can see where these efforts are that can have a good impact and actually better people's lives after this disaster. So thank you for talking to me. I'll continue to follow what's going on in Houston, and you know, perhaps six or nine months from now, it might be nice to follow up and see if Houston has been able to make any good progress in the aftermath to see what's going on, because we know that there are going to be vultures that swoop in to take advantage of these people.
Yeah, for sure. And I'd be definitely glad to give you those updates. Hopefully they'll be good. It's going to depend on us. There's nobody else who's coming to save any of us. But we can, I think, together really make sure that we fortify this, and that, you know, it doesn't take a hurricane for us to compile our resources.
Well, I know that you have to get to a distribution, so thank you for talking to me, and I'll send you a link when this is posted.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you. You have a great day.
Alrighty. Bye. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latter part of the Unauthorized Disclosure podcast, the discussion portion. I'm Kevin Gastola, and I'm here with Rania Kalik. Hey, Rania.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How's Lebanon?
Well, there's not a hurricane right now, and there are no wildfires, so Lebanon's doing pretty good compared to the country that you are in.
Yeah, it seems like not a few days goes by that there isn't another hurricane bearing down upon the United States. But I have to put out this message from the fossil fuel company that funds our show, because full disclosure now, we've been receiving money from like a really tiny but very powerful and influential energy company. And so I don't know why this is happening.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on either. We've talked to several scientists. I don't know if they're scientists, but we've talked to several people.
They say they know science.
Yeah, they say they know science, and apparently it's completely inconclusive. No one really knows why this is happening. There might be climate change, but it might not be. So there you go. That's what the New York Times tells us as well. So, you know, Kevin, I guess we should say, Kevin, before we started recording, was telling me that there was an article in the New York Times, in the New York fucking Times, that was like, yeah, I guess it's not really, we're not sure why there's these hurricanes are happening. It might be climate change, but you know, might not be.
Yes, it was by the journalist's name is Henry Fountain, which I refuse to believe is the real name of this person. It must be a pseudonym.
Henry Fountain.
I've never heard of this before. It sounds made up, but that's okay. Maybe there's a reason why they don't want to
kind of
attach
like the
their name.
name,
Maybe they don't
kind of
want
like
to
the name it
attach
all is.
their name to climate denial and industry. Sympathizing,
Skepticism.
this kind of like climate skepticism. So, and the story was basically like, why is this happening? Or it was like, Harvey, Irma, Jose, why are these happening? And they were like, it's the season. And so, quite literally, it was like they are saying, tis the season for hurricanes. And they got to this part. There's this whole paragraph in this story where they say that the data set for hurricanes is just not big enough for any of them to tell whether these extreme weather events are actually fueled by climate change, which is so horribly and terribly absurd because, first off, I don't think that we have enough time for them to get whatever data set they think is going to be large enough for us to figure out if like there is a connection. I mean, something's wrong with your science. Like you need to adjust because we need to figure this out much sooner. And like we're all dying and like human extinction is on the horizon while you guys fritter away about this data set not being large enough. But mind you, like the larger thing is that it's all just this like ploy to not talk about climate change being this imminent thing that has to be addressed.
It's kind of like when Shihab Ratzani from Al Jazeera was on MSNBC last week. I don't know if you saw this. And he was reporting live from like some place in Texas, like some small town where that was devastated by the hurricane. And he started talking about the oil industry in that town and how they had basically robbed the people of this town, made all this money off of the oil. And then nothing was reinvested to like prevent against what they knew would be the consequences of climate change. And as he's saying this, he gets cut off by the anchor at MSNBC. I think it was like Ali Velshi being like, "Well, Shihab, can you hold on for a second? We've got a," like he cuts him off to go, "Oh, we've got images coming out right now of a rescue." And it like just like shows a rescue. And then it's like, "Okay, Shihab, you were saying," and then he continues what he was talking about the oil industry and how it's robbed the town. And he starts saying how now like people are worried that they're leaking toxic chemicals. And then once again he gets cut off, and eventually they totally lose contact with him, like as he's like really getting into it and like naming names. But it's like there is this attempt, even though we all know it's climate change, even by the supposed liberal press, if you will, to try and still stoke this like skepticism or hide the truth in reality. And it's like really concerning because at this point, like we're running out of time. I don't know, we might already be out of time. And you see the devastation. There's freaking like wildfires in like three states right now, engulfing three states. And you have these like insane, unprecedented, like terrible hurricanes that just keep getting worse. And the response is just to be like shrug our, you know, shrug, the media is just like shrugging its shoulders, like, wow, this is really crazy, guys. We don't know what's going on. We're not
And
really sure. Now back to
meanwhile,
our advertisers.
yeah, and meanwhile, we don't just have anyone running the EPA. We have this incubus who goes by the name of Scott Pruitt, who has been like put there. I mean, it's like the oil or energy barons of the US conjured a demon and they were like, now we anoint you the leader of the one agency that has any power in this country to restrain us. And you have all of these plants that are going offline. You have like chemical waste and toxins seeping. And meanwhile, you find out that like here's Scott Pruitt, who's like, we're not going to do any chemical waste studies anymore. We're going to suspend those, or like we're not going to enforce these rules. So there's no consequences, and everyone is just, breathing in the sort of belching out toxins that are entering the atmosphere. And there and then you got this, and it's like like what you're saying, you try to tell these left of center establishment outlets that this matters and they claim to care about climate change, but at the same time they hire people like Bret Stephens. MSNBC has him on their airwaves, and so New York Times prints him in his in the pages, just basically concern trolling Greenpeace activists about what kind of activism is legit or not.
Oh my God. I mean, I just thought I'm becoming so pessimistic about the world just because of like the terrible direction everything seems to be going in. Well, that's not very inspiring. Sorry to our listeners. The world is ending. The world is fucking ending. Just everybody hide.
So let's go on to talk about some of what has been unfolding in the last 7 to 10 days. I don't know if it's made it to Lebanon yet, Rania, but maybe you've heard that Hillary Clinton has a book that's coming out, and she's got some people she'd like to blame for what happened to her.
Is she gonna blame the people who ran her campaign
I,
for her not going to like Wisconsin and stuff?
yeah, I don't know. I don't have the book yet, but I've heard about some excerpts, and so far,
where she blames her campaign?
yeah, I think she's gonna take full responsibility for
Or
everything that.
even a little responsibility.
Oh, don't you know that it's sexism to ask her to take responsibility? Because not even Al Gore has had to take as much responsibility as Hillary Clinton.
Well, from what I understand, to be fair, from what I understand, she does explain in her book how it was Bernie Sanders who forced her to not go to Wisconsin, and also Bernie Sanders who forced her to do the whole Libya regime change situation, also Bernie Sanders who forced her to vote for the Iraq War. And I'm assuming she also mentioned, because I hear she blames Bernie Sanders. So I'm assuming these are things, like, I'm assuming these are big exclusive, sort of like almost like breaking headlines in a way, because she's basically telling us that it was Bernie Sanders who made her do those paid speeches to Wall Street, which was a big deal. She really should have mentioned that back during the campaign trail. Because I think that, I mean, I assume that's what she discusses in her book if she's blaming Bernie Sanders. I had no idea he was behind all that, by the way.
He's a very powerful, influential person that the Democratic Party had to immediately marginalize so that
Did
he wouldn't be
you
in their
know?
way.
Well, did you know that that it was Bernie Sanders who who made her use the separate email server as well? Like, I thought that was, I mean, that's a pretty big deal too. Bernie Sanders is all powerful, and because he's so sexist. I didn't know this either, but he slut-shamed Hillary Clinton into calling black youth super predators. I'm assuming that's basically what happened, since she blames Bernie Sanders.
Does she also blame him for NAFTA?
Well, I imagine so, because if he's to blame for the election, then this goes back decades. Really, this goes back decades. I mean, Bernie Sanders has been bullying Hillary Clinton into making terrible decisions for decades now. And so that's pretty much why she lost the election, because of all those things that Bernie Sanders made her do so long ago. it's really st it's stunning, and it really shows you the level of, you know, sexism. I mean, if anything, feminism means being able to blame everybody else for the awful things that you have done to other people, including women.
So, you know about the thing that she put in her book about how she's upset and pissed that Bernie could propose wonderful things to America and she couldn't.
Yeah, which is fair. I mean, fair enough.
Do you think we should read this on air just to make sure we give this the proper skewering? So she says that this is what's in the book, that basically Bernie is so instead of the famous 8-minute abs exercise routine, he's going to market 7-minute abs. It's just the same but quicker. then the driver, played by Ben Stiller. So she's referencing There's Something About Mary.
Okay.
And so is referencing how in the movie, then Ben Stiller's character says, well, why not 6-minute abs? That's what it was like in policy debates with Bernie. We would propose a bold infrastructure investment plan or an ambitious new apprenticeship program for young people. And then Bernie would announce basically the same thing, but bigger. On issue after issue, it was like he kept proposing 4-minute abs or even no minute abs, magic abs.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, that Bernie Sanders got all of his ideas from the Clinton campaign. It's not as though he spent his entire career promoting things like universal health care. That idea didn't even come to him until he thought, oh, wow, I'm going to one-up Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton's plan for health care, and I'm going to say universal health care. I mean, he did that. And Bernie Sanders has literally never in his career as a politician ever promoted the idea of universal health care until he wanted to outdo Hillary.
I mean,
wow, that is like some error. That's quite the level of arrogance. and also the gall to go there. And then
I love that, like, the next part is her giving, and this is going to lead into talking about dealing with Clinton supporters and what we do to move forward. So then it follows up and she gives this Facebook post of one of her supporters, this incredible shiny treatment. She puts it on a pedestal and it's in her book, and it's like a fake conversation that could have happened between Bernie, Hillary, and Bernie supporters. It's like a script.
Okay.
Bernie.
Okay.
I think America should get a pony. Hillary, how will you pay for the pony? Where will the pony come from? How will you get Congress to agree to the pony? Bernie, Hillary thinks America doesn't deserve a pony. Bernie supporters, Hillary hates ponies. Hillary, actually, I love ponies. Bernie supporters, she changed her position on ponies. Which Hillary? Which Hillary? So the second one is actually the WTCH.
What? Are you, that's actually in her book?
This is actually in her book.
Oh my god, that's so childish. Wow, and that's not at all how it happened.
So, like, here's the deal. We should talk about this because Bernie Sanders had the appropriate reaction to Hillary Clinton's book. It's the one that adults should have, but even this show isn't going to rise to that level. Because we feel like we should talk about this book, and it's amusing and fun to roast these people.
Reaction?
But Bernie's reaction was like, look, we need to move forward. Like, I have things that I'm working on. We're trying to fight for, like, single-payer health care. I'm focused on the battles in 2017. I don't think we need to go back and relitigate 2016.
Well, that's what we're here for.
But we're here on another's disclosure to tell you that we're going to
that we are extremely, like, immature, and we're totally gonna sit here and rehash, because I'm sorry, like, if you and all your stupid supporters, that's right, I'm calling them stupid, if you and all your stupid supporters are gonna sit here and pretend like it's still summer 2016, then I mean, we have no choice but to pretend like I mean, first of all, Sanders has a point, like, move the fuck on. It really, like, 20, I mean, okay, this happened a year ago. It is now 2017. and shit's going like shit's hitting the fan so bad on everything. And you want to sit here and like rewrite last year to make yourself look better? Like, please give me a fucking break. But if you're gonna try and do that, then also please don't be such a lying piece of shit. Like, take responsibility for the stuff that you fucked up and stop trying to blame everybody else. And I'm not just talking about Hillary Clinton, I'm talking about her supporters because they just like won't let any of this go. I mean, you know, we were talking before we started recording, like how our mentions are still full of fucking Hillary supporters constantly attacking us. Like, they're the bullies, and we're at a point where we're supposed to be like working with everybody to try and like defeat all these Trump things. And instead of that happening, every time I open my mouth about anything, I just get flooded with like all this hate. Like, well, it's your fault Trump got elected. Well, it's like grow the fuck up. Like, these people spend more of their time attacking the Bernie Sanders crowd and anybody to the left of them than they do attacking the alt-right. Like, it's so fucking absurd.
So let me put an example to this because Neera Tanden, who people may or may not know, is the president of the Center for American Progress. It holds itself out as a progressive think tank. I think that's open to discussion about whether they actually do.
Well, I mean, because they're funded by like huge, massive corporations and banks. So that's how they're about as progressive as like Donald Trump's. Okay, well, that's a
Yeah,
bit
I mean, there
extreme.
are some days that Donald Trump might actually be to the left of them.
Maybe.
Anyways, Neera published on Labor Day an op-ed that maybe some of our listeners are familiar with that was in Teen Vogue. It was published by Teen Vogue. It was calling for supporting the fight for 15. It was like why the fight for 15 matters to millennials and women. She had to instill in identity politics into it. Or maybe the editors at D Teen Vogue did, but whatever. So they gave this, she gave this op-ed to Teen Vogue to run, and people immediately pointed out to her that there was a problem because she voted against language related to the $15 minimum wage when she was on the Democratic Platform Committee. And this happened in St. Louis. So, like the earlier phase in June, she voted against it. And so this person, Leslie, tweeted at her, FYI, Neera Tanden was against $15 when she was on the DNC Platform Committee. Publish someone who isn't just with us sometimes, Teen Vogue. And Neera reacted, this is false. $15 minimum wage is in the Democratic platform. Voted for it multiple times. May want to delete this error. And she was going on, but she wouldn't address like the fact that she was voting against it. And she's kind of true. And Leslie's kind of like not exactly getting it right. But the fact is that like Keith Ellison proposed that you index the $15 minimum wage so that it could keep pace with the economy. Because if you don't, if you just leave it at $15, then we're going to have the same situation we have now with the minimum wage, which is like $7.50. So you have to have it keep moving with the pace of like inflation. And so without a mechanism, it's useless. It's just kind of like a one-time gesture by Democrats to acknowledge your poverty and pain. So she, and this is the thing, like with Neera and all these other people, is they keep rewriting their past. They don't address what they've done. And then when you call them on it, you're the one that's out of line. And so I called attention to it, and immediately this is what I got. And I'm gonna read all of these because I think this is an example of the way that the vast majority of these Clinton loyalists or supporters, you know, the ones that still have I'm still with her in their Twitter headers, or like they have pictures, some of them will have pictures of like Hillary on the campaign trail with her hands high in the air, sometimes even holding hands with Barack Obama. It's just like weird sort of like fan club thing. So this person, Odette Roulette on Twitter, has gone back and deleted all of these tweets, but says to me, here's the deal. Clinton was for $12 an hour in poorer states, but wanted wealthier states to go to $15. She was being, I don't know, thoughtful.
Wow.
And then she got pissed off at me because I kept going at her and was disagreeing with her. And you don't want to disagree with these people because you're not allowed to have discourse on the internet with Clinton supporters. So then this amazing tweet that I'm going to save until the end of time because nobody has sent me anything quite like it before. Odette said to me, "Here's what's really going on." And then in all caps, "You," but she didn't spell out "you," "you don't get politics." And then she said, "You don't get civics. You didn't read the platforms. You just hated the idea of," and then in all caps, "vagina."
Wow, she really like figured you out and totally told you by engaging with your argument instead of just calling you a nasty name.
But I love it. It's just like, you just hated the idea of,
a vagina.
I hate the concept of it. Like, not that, I'm physically disgusted and don't want to touch a vagina, but, just, the whole concept, as it is conceived for the human body. But also, I want to point out that there is this very raw essentialism to this that I don't understand, because I would just like you fucking idiots to be consistent with your bullshit, because either Hillary Clinton as a woman deserves to be treated with respect and dignity, and we should expect that she can do whatever she wants, and that includes be a corrupt Democrat like men, or I should see her as just a human body with genitalia.
A vagina.
That's a vagina. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, one or the other. It can't be both. No, I mean, that's the thing is, this is what that's actually the funniest way I've ever heard anybody put it. But it's just, I mean, that's just another way of saying you're sexist if you disagree with Hillary. That's what she's saying in the most, and I think what is a very creative way, actually. Just, you have a problem with vagina.
This is so ridiculous. It's so cartoonish.
It is so cartoonish, and it's it's just fucking old. It's getting old. How much longer do we have to have this stupid fucking fight? Move the fuck on. Hillary Clinton lost the election.
I really hope that Peter Dow and this Vera operation has turned all of you and everyone else into the biggest jokes on the internet, and that somehow this is going to go away very soon.
I mean, I hope so, but it does, every couple months, I'm like, is it summer 2016 again? I'm just I thought we were past that. I thought it was almost 2018. But apparently people seem to think that we're still in the primary process between Hillary and Bernie.
So then she said to me, it's just one more tweet that I will read. And she said, "Well, you need our votes now. Get ready to kiss some ass."
What is she talking about?
And basically suggesting that we shouldn't fight with them. We shouldn't alienate Clinton supporters because they're needed to beat Donald Trump in 2020. And I have to say that I don't think that's true. I think that you can't have it both ways. Again, I have to plead for consistency from the fucking idiots out there, because you can't have it both ways. You can't get angry at Bernie supporters and keep claiming that 12% of them voted for Trump and cost Clinton the election, and then turn around and say that we need to kiss your ass so that we can beat Donald Trump. Obviously, you're not the votes that people have to go after. You're going to always vote for Democrats. There isn't anything up for grabs here. That's the problem, is that you're taken for granted. The Democrats don't care about you, and they don't offer you anything. We're trying to get them to offer us something, and we're trying to get them to also be candidates that offer alternatives to Donald Trump.
Right, and I gotta say, just on a very basic level, if you want people to get Democrats elected, talking to them like that isn't gonna help. I don't know about you, Kevin, but when somebody tells me that I have to get ready to kiss their ass, it doesn't really make me want to vote for their side. I don't know. Maybe it's, again, maybe it's just me, but like you can't bully people into supporting your ver like
I don't know
your
if,
people.
I don't
You do. I
know
mean,
if Hillary
maybe I'm
Clinton has sent me
wrong. Maybe
a,
I'm
maybe
wrong.
if Hillary Clinton had sent me a newsletter last year and been like, get ready to kiss my ass, I would have been like, oh,
Yeah.
great, I'm with her. Let's
I'm like,
go.
forget Bernie. Like, what was I thinking? Now I see the light. Like, geez. It's just so insane that this is how people, anyways, whatever. I fuck all of
But I think
that.
it's reflective, and like just to expand it out very briefly before we wrap our show, and I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to get in here, but we had this decision happen where the DACA, this executive order to protect mostly undocumented youth from being deported, is going to be suspended or fully rescinded by Donald Trump's administration. And so you're going to have deportations of these people who came here, thought they were going to have safety, and Barack Obama had some role to play in making that possible. But yet he comes out with this statement in the last week, and he's preaching about how Donald Trump needs to find decency, and he's going on about all this stuff that he says his administration had to do, and he's talking about prosecutorial discretion. Meanwhile, never addressing the fact that his administration was deporting dreamers, was actually involved in escalating and expanding this deportation machine. And everyone's cheering Obama, and they're like, yay, voice of reason, I wish you could still be my president. But like, nobody seems to get that like he is being completely dishonest about the role that he's played in making it possible for Trump to do this, because yeah, he left it on very tenuous ground. It was just like an executive action that could be undone in less than a day, and Trump's doing it.
And also, like, Obama deported more people than any president ever. And even if they weren't dreamers, a lot of those people were like young people who had grown up in this country and who didn't even know the language of the country that they were deported to and hadn't even ever been there. That happened a lot under Obama. And I'm really glad people care about this now. But it's just really cynical the way that all of these, like, Democrats are sort of using it to try and absolve themselves of, like you said, the role they played to make this possible, including expanding the deportation machine, as well as another thing Obama expanded is the d is like the immigrant detention machine, where like for-profit prisons basically hold immigrants, including women and children, as like in like holding centers and make money off of it. So, and this is like, and this goes to a broader theme, is this sort of like Trump's really fucked up and probably represents like the extreme degree of rottenness in American culture and society. That said, the bad in America does not begin with Trump. Like, he's building off all of these things that already existed and were already happening. And so when people like suddenly now put all police violence is because of Trump, it's like, no, it's been like that. Like this is, it's been like that in this country. Now, maybe now it seems like more extreme because maybe it is more extreme now because of who's in charge, but it's been like that for a lot of people. And to deny that is just fucking absurd. Or to pretend like it wasn't, it was like perfect before and now we've got problems is really like, is just really dishonest, like you said.
Well, I just get sick of putting all of these people on a pedestal and letting them grace our
Awful.
airwaves and treat them like they're doing God's work. Because like James Clapper will show up on my TV and be like, Donald Trump is unfit to be president, and then everyone's like, yay, and I'm like, yeah, but that guy lied to us in Congress about surveillance and everything. But like, I guess that doesn't matter, because all you have to do is say you're against Donald Trump and you're rehabilitated.
Yep, that seems to be the case completely. And it's like now, like we're all supposed to like now, like do like a George W. Bush. George W. Bush is a president everybody's like nostalgic for. And it's like, oh my God. It's just, it's such a fucking joke. I just, it's like we're in a nightmare.
All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap our show there. I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add. We should take a moment and just say thank you to all of the supporters. We had a dozen or more people become patrons in the previous month, so we're really grateful to the people who continue to join with us and become supporters of the show. I know we have hundreds, if not thousands, of regular listeners every week, and you're really helping us to become successful by sharing the show, and we appreciate you. Even if you are not able to give a few dollars every month to support us. And we're going to have some exclusive content that will be posted for just patrons, so look for that. And then I guess we can tease, we can't really say it, but Rania, you've got some stuff coming from your reporting in the Middle East that people can look forward to.
Yeah, I was in Iraq for a couple of weeks, and I did some really, what I think is some of my most important reporting that I've ever done. So I'm really excited for that to be published and come out. And when it is, we'll share it and stuff. There's one more thing actually I'd like to talk about before we wrap.
Oh, sure.
And we don't have to go that in depth into it, but it seems like we're like on the course to go to war with North Korea, with all of the hawkishness we see coming from both the media and the Trump administration that seems to be egging him on. And I just want to say, like, I keep seeing the leader of North Korea being presented as this like irrational actor who has no ability to like think rationally whatsoever, and he's just like crazy and constantly about to push like the button to go to war. This depiction of Kim Jong-un is like so common. Because he says, like, they'll be like, oh, he said some crazy thing. He's threatening America. I just want to point out, I think it's really fascinating that that's actually mirrored in the reaction and response from our own leaders. I believe in the past few weeks, the Trump administration has threatened North Korea with fire and fury. I think that was like the direct quote, fire and fury. And also, it might have been McMaster. I'm not sure exactly who it was, but someone important in like the Defense or State Department. Maybe it was Rex Tillerson. I can't remember exactly who threatened to like annihilate North Korea, like actually use the word annihilate. And this sort of like bombastic rhetoric, like we keep hearing it from our own leaders. And I think it's fascinating that it's like we're supposed to look at North Korea as a place full of people who are just like irrational and crazy for like saying things like we're gonna bomb America. Meanwhile, like we're not supposed to think the same thing about our leaders who are threatening to annihilate that country, literally. So I just want to make that like comparison because it's a huge double standard. Because if anything, we have an actually irrational man as president that like doesn't get talked about in the same way when it comes to foreign policy.
Well, no, look back to last month, and what was making it worse was actually Donald Trump's reaction.
Yeah.
It's and you sort of have that situation that happens when, everyone sees a certain group of people as the enemies, and they're just the people to demonize, and you don't want to take responsibility for your behavior and how your side is making it worse. But, saying you're gonna rain fire and fury on a country, and then later on, when you're not happy with how North Korea didn't just submit, and you say, well, it looks like my initial response wasn't good enough. And it's like, I'm gonna have to be more harsh in what I say. And it's just like, listen to yourself, first of all, you sound like a child, and two, you're just making it worse. Like, there's nothing backed behind it. It's what was really amazing is all of this bluster, and there's no like policy attached to it. And so, who knows? And then also, I want to bring in, because this is like tangentially related to you, but we also talked about this on an episode of our show in August or July. I want to refer people to go listen to our interview with Tom Secker, if you get a chance. But at the Gray Zone Project, Tim Shorrock just published this piece about Sony, Obama, Seth Rogen, and the CIA working to force regime change in North Korea,
Oh, yeah.
and how they were using the movie The Interview. It's actually an incredible film. And Tom on our show is absolutely right. It's a remarkable film because it's one of the first or only films that you'll ever see where, like, the leader of a country is like openly assassinated on screen. Like, just think about that for a moment. Like, there aren't very many films where the leaders,
Well, we should specify the living leader, like the current
the
leader.
current leader, Kim Jong-un, is killed. Is actually his head explodes in like this very cartoonish but ugly, gross way. That was like a big thing of like whether they should leave that in the movie, and because of the sort of like repercussions that could happen, and the calculus of one of these consultants that is mentioned in this piece is basically saying, well, yeah, we should have that in there because this might actually inspire regime change in North Korea.
Yeah, I'm sure the North Koreans are going to watch the interview and go, wow, we should really like. Oh, I guess they meant policymakers. They thought they were going to inspire policymakers to do regime change.
No, they wanted to like, so there was also an operation where, and I like how like there are people like Thor Halvorsen mentioned in here. Anyways, like there are the people who favored the operation, and I think there were even some people who were involved in it, and maybe they won't cop to it, but there were like USB sticks with the movie, and then even in DVDs that were like dropped on the other side. Like South Korean activists were like sending these over with balloons to let them
Okay,
drop and then.
that's what they're gonna think is that's amazing that that's how that they really I've seen the interview and I'm gonna state my unpopular opinion. I actually enjoyed it, which is actually not good because like it's like a piece of propaganda, but it's funny. I'll give it that. I'm not a huge Seth Rogen fan. He has me blocked on Twitter
That's
because
hilarious.
I went after his Israel politics once. But anyways. The point is it was actually like an enjoyable, entertaining movie, as bad as that sounds, but not to the extent that I think it would actually impact people who might see it on a USB that was dropped into North Korea. I mean, I don't think they're not going to suddenly be like, oh, wow, I never saw it like that. Like,
But
that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
that's our naivete about North Korea and like believing that it's so repressed that like, if you just give us it, it's this is
Like, well,
democracy.
show me James Franco and Seth Rogen acting like two idiots, trying to like unsuccessfully and then ultimately successfully assassinate our leader, and suddenly I'm gonna like understand and see the light of America. Are you fucking kidding me?
Not to mention that, I'm
What a
sure that like
joke.
if you're from North Korea, you probably will like watch it and go, those buffoons, they think our culture is like that. Like we're not really like that. Like
Yeah, like, well, I mean, who knows? No one, I mean, North Korea is so closed off. But at the same time, it's really sad because, like, the history of what America's done to North Korea is never talked about. Like, we already annihilated that country. Like, you've got the leaders of America threatening to annihilate and drop fire and fury on North Korea. We already did that. Like, we already did that. That's why it's the way it is, because we, like, destroyed it completely. And so it's just, but that like none of that context is, of course, ever allowed on air anywhere. If people really knew the extent of the devastation America wreaked in North Korea, like they'd be apologizing and they'd be like, "Oh, that's why it's like that." Like now I get it, because it is an extremely repressive country. But goddamn, they've got a fucked up history that America played a role in creating. Anyways,
All right.
on that note, now I guess we should wrap. But again, appreciate all the support for the show. And for those who aren't able to support monetarily, please like share the show on social media, on Facebook and Twitter, and spread it to your friends. It's another way that you can support us without donating if you don't have the money to.
We live in such an absurd world, Rania. Just leave us everyone with one note. Seth Rogen thinks, and all these people are talking about that story that Tim did. They're like attributing it to WikiLeaks because WikiLeaks
Yeah, so it's just a Russian plot. Because as we all
it
know, behind everything that every opinion you don't like, or every story, every news story that you don't like, is the hand of one Mr. Putin.
And sexism.
And sexism.
All right.
Depending on, yeah. Anyways, all right. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.